Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is employing the features of SQL ODBC WebSphere Data Power with examples, and WebSphere Data Power Appliances SQL ODBC Use Cases Presentation Part 2. Today's presenters are Moses Alate Papo, Carol Miller, and Paul McGinney. Moses, Carol, and Paul are part of a team that provides Level 2 customer support for the IBM Data Power appliances. Their primary goal is to quickly resolve customer questions and issues that the customer experiences with the product and to collaborate with the Level 3 engineering team in delivering the ultimate in customer satisfaction. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Moses, Carol, and Paul.
Thank you, Joseph. This is Paul McGinney, and good morning, everyone. Before we begin, I would just like to acknowledge my teammates for their continued support during these presentations. And my colleagues are Moses Alote, Papo, Carol Miller, Trey Williamson, Andrew Simmering, Dominic McCallie, and Max Chang. As Joseph had said, this is a second presentation of a three-part series regarding the Data Power SQL ODBC component. The title for Part 2 is entitled WebSphere Data Power Appliances SQL ODBC Use Cases Presentation, Part 2. Joseph, can we please move to Slide 2? Okay, for our agenda this morning, I'm going to take us through the introduction. I'm going to go over a summary of Part 1 of the presentation, and I shall also briefly cover the evolution of the SQL data source object. In addition, I'm going to go and talk about the SQL data source as far as having an overview, configuration, usage, and limitations are concerned. And then my colleague Moses is going to talk us through five use cases, which you all should find quite interesting. Lastly, my colleague Carol shall wrap up with a summary of today's presentation, as well as describing additional WebSphere product resources. So, Joseph, if we can please move to Slide 3. So now, for the introduction, as previously mentioned, this is the second part of a three-part presentation. The Part 1 presentation can be found at the indicated URL. Part 2 is going to focus on both the Data Power SQL extension element, the Data Power SQL extension function. We will also touch upon SQL ODBC configuration and review some use cases. Please move to Slide 4. The next few slides are going to review the Part 1 of the presentation. So we know that the SQL ODBC component is a license feature. It requires the SQL ODBC license, and it's not available on all appliances. It's just available on the XI50s and XB60s by default and the XM70. So basically, what the component allows is it provides the configuration to establish a direct connection to a database instance on a remote data server. And it also allows for optional valid ODBC configuration parameters to be defined. Joseph, can we please move to Slide 5? Just to continue with the summary of Part 1, so basically we can connect to a remote database server, and the supported database servers as of 3.8.1 firmware are DB2, Microsoft, Oracle, and Sybase. DB2, we support versions up to 9.5. For the SQL, Microsoft SQL Server, we support versions all the way up to 2008. Oracle, it supports versions up to 11G, and Sybase, we support versions up to 15. Joseph, let's move to Slide number 6, please. And continuing our summary of Part 1, so we can dynamically perform database operations such as select, insert, update, delete, and we can also use stored procedures. The SQL ODBC component is used by a SQL action in a processing policy, a custom style sheet, or we can employ the SQL extension function or SQL execute extension element. And Joseph, if we could please move to slide 7. The next few slides are going to talk about the evolution of the SQL data source object. So it all started in 3.3.3 where SQL was added. Initially, we only supported Oracle, and we only had availability via the extension function and SQL action. We did not have the extension element in play. And initially, we had licenses on the XS40 and the XI50. In our 3.5.0 firmware, we added support for DB2. Joseph, slide number 8, please. In 3.6.0, we removed support for the XS40 and added support for Sybase. In 3.6.1, we then added support for the SQL Server, DB2 version 9, and we added a status provider, which is kind of a for monitoring purposes. Slide number 9, please, Joseph. In 3.7.1, we added connection pooling for DB2 version 9, and it was in 3.7.1 that we added the extension element. 3.7.2, we added connection pooling for non-DB2 drivers. 3.7.3, we removed legacy DB2 driver and renamed DB2 version 9 to DB2. And in 3.8.0, we added support for Oracle's real application cluster and connectivity via service name. Let's move to slide number 10. So with the SQL database ODBC component, we can connect to a remote database server. We can use the following services. We can use a web application firewall, we can use an XML firewall, or we can use a multi-protocol gateway or web service proxy. We cannot use this in the front end or back end of a service, and it is used in the processing rules, request, response, and error rule. Okay, why don't we move on to slide number 11. Okay, the next couple of slides are just going to talk about the configuration aspect of the SQL data source component. As you can see by this slide, we have a SQL data source object in an up operational state. This slide displays a Sybase database source object with the applicable required fields such as IP address and port number, for example. Joseph, slide number 12. Just to finish up on the configuration aspect, there's another piece of the configuration that needs to be mentioned, and this is the data source configuration parameters tab. This tab allows us to specify specific attributes for the database in question. In this example, we have a name value pair that with this configuration we're able to handle certain special characters for when using a Sybase database. So I know that might be a little hard to read, but that name value pair is for handling in Sybase certain Spanish special characters. So, you know, there's some flexible use with this tab that can be employed. Joseph, let's move to slide number 13. The next several slides are going to show the current limitations and touch in more detail the usage of the SQL data source object. We're going to talk about the SQL action. We're going to talk about the in the processing rule, as well as the extension function and extension element. Let's move to slide number 14, Joseph, please. Unfortunately, there is a lack of strong security, if you will, SSL, but however, with that being said, you can employ the SQL injection filter or encrypt the data with the encrypt action on a processing rule. Also, you can wrap the database connection in an SSL proxy profile to achieve an encrypted database connection. And at this time, there is limited database vendor support. So we're supporting Oracle, DB2, Sybase, and Microsoft SQL Server, and hopefully over time that list will grow. So, Joseph, why don't we move to slide number 15? Okay, now we're going to talk about the SQL action. We're going to talk about the extension function and extension element. So with the SQL action, which can go on a processing rule, we have different ways of using the SQL action to communicate with a relational database management system. In the SQL action, once we specify the data source, the SQL data source object, we then can construct a SQL statement that in the SQL action we can use it by via having it as static, style sheet, or a variable. let's move on to slide number 16. So you'll see we have the SQL data source. I know I don't have anything specified there, but let's say there is something specified, and you'll see the SQL input method is static, and the SQL text is select star, which is all columns from the orders table. That's one way of getting your node set from the SQL action, and that's via a method of static. Joseph, let's move to slide 17. In this example, kind of the same thing. We need to specify a SQL data source, but the SQL input method in this case is going to be via a style sheet. So in this case, what we would probably have is in the style sheet, we would be using an SQL extension function or an SQL execute extension element. So let's move on to slide number 18, Joseph. Okay, and this is basically, again, the same thing as static and style sheet. This is now saying our SQL input method is variable. And you'll see I have a variable name there, var context select / orders. So the thought is that in your processing rule where you have this SQL action, this variable was assigned a SQL statement via a prior action, like perhaps maybe it could be a set variable or like a style sheet. So, Joseph, let's move on to slide 19. And once we have configured our SQL action, be it specifying the input method as static, style sheet, or variable, you will see that the end result will be a processing rule as such. In the middle, you can see that little icon that represents the SQL action. Joseph, why don't we move on to slide number 20? The next few slides are going to talk about the SQL extension function. The SQL extension function, basically, it's a subset of the SQL extension element. It just has two parameters. There's a place for specifying the SQL data source object, and the actual SQL statement itself. So, Joseph, let's move on to slide number 21. And that's basically the syntax. And in this example, you will see that we put our SQL statement in a variable, which is called SQL string. Then we have another variable called SQL node set that represents the output of what our select statement will retrieve back. And I'd like you to note the XSL copy statement and the employment of the DP SQL execute extension function. Not the extension element, the extension function. So that variable SQL node set is going to return us the results of the SQL statement defined in the variable above called SQL string. Okay, Joseph, let's move on to slide number 22. Slide number 22, okay, we get a little more complex here. And slide numbers 22 through 27 talk about the DP SQL execute extension element. Now, the extension element is a superset of the functionality provided by the DP SQL execute extension function. It can be as simple as the example we just saw for the SQL execute extension function, or we can make it a little more complex with the use of parameter markers. And basically, parameter markers are represented by question marks in the code, and they are just indicators of temporary placeholders. And these placeholders or arguments, if you will, get filled in by using XPath expressions from, for example, an incoming XML document. So why don't we move on to slide number 23. I think I discussed this already. Okay, yeah, we went over this. So why don't we move on to slide number 24, Joseph. And parameter markers are represented by question marks. Parameter markers act as temporary placeholders. Okay, good. We discussed this, and I just want to make everybody aware that the parameter markers are just really, they're not too complex. They're just represented by question marks, and you got to fill in those question marks via, like, arguments, getting the values from the XML document with XPath expressions. And Joseph, if we can please move on to slide number 25. And this was kind of like our DPSQL execute extension function, that example. This is just doing a simple select operation. And as stated here, it's equivalent to using the SQL execute extension function within the select within the select attribute of an XSL copy of element. And please, Joseph, slide number 26. Okay. Now here we get a little more complex. We're using the SQL execute extension element again, and we're doing an insert into a table. And you will see that when you do an insert, you have to specify some values. So note the parameter markers. We have four parameter markers indicated by the question marks in the values piece of the SQL statement. And then you'll see we have our arguments listed below, which we're getting as values using XPath. And this would be just a simple insert using parameter markers. And Joseph, if we can go to slide number 27. Similar to the insert, except what I want to point out here is that what we're doing in this case is we're actually calling a stored procedure. And we're calling the stored procedure with three parameter markers, which are then defined in the arguments group that's seen below. Why don't we move on to slide number 28? Okay, great. Thank you, Joseph. At this point, we're going to discuss our use cases, and I'm going to turn the presentation over to my colleague, Moses, who will take us through some use cases that involve transaction data storage, retrieval, authentication and authorization, logging, batch processing, and binary processing. So, Moses, if you would, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. I'm Moses Alutepapo, and I'll be talking about the five use cases Paul mentioned. So we'll start with data retrieval or storage into the database. Then we'll look at how it can be used in terms of like the data source also used to authenticate and authorize client requests. Then we'll look at login and auditing, batch processing. Then we'll finish with binary processing. Slide 29, please. So our first use case would be data retrieval or storage. And, you know, this would be like your very first step that like you want to take just to make sure that your database setup or usage on the device at least works. So you have a case where, let's say, you just want to include or insert some data into the database. So you want a very simple setup. So this is just showing a case where the client sends some data to the device, goes through some processing, but then before the data is sent to the backend, you want to store or retrieve some other values before you send that data to the backend. So we'll go on to the next slide and have a closer look at what a configuration can look like. Slide 30, please. So in this case, what data power service can you use, right? So this is a case where it will really depend on what you're trying to accomplish, right? We have like the XML firewall, web application firewall service. We have the multi-protocol gateway. We have the web service proxy. So that will certainly depend on your requirements. But in the case that you have a very simple test that you want to perform, maybe you just want to test your database conversation on a box, you can just create a very simple XML firewall service with a loopback for the backend, and then you can maybe use a very simple configuration in the processing policy as well. So you have maybe instead of using a style sheet with the extension element and extension functions, you want to use the SQL data source, the SQL action. You know, for this, we'll just look at it like a very simple XML firewall service with a loopback configuration. So it is a case where we just want to insert data or retrieve data and not really forward any additional data to the backend. So we'll choose like the loopback in this case. Slide 31, please. Paul covered this part as well with the SQL action. So this is a case where we just want to perform a very simple query to the database. We just want to retrieve some records, all records from the others database. So we, you know, once again use a very simple configuration here, the SQL action. We specify the data source. In this case, the data source object name is DB2 data source. So as the name implies, we'll most likely be connecting to a DB2 database in this case. And also because this is a very simple configuration, we're using a static SQL input method. And then we specify what the statement is. In this case, it's select star from orders, so it will select all entries from the orders table. Slide 32, please. So this is what the processing policy will look like with your SQL action in there. So the very first image that looks like the equal sign is just a match action. Once again, if you know this is maybe just like a very simple test, you can either, for this SQL action, we know we set it up to select some data from the database, so you can either configure the match to be to end with slash select. So once that matches is once that URI is matched, it will trigger this error rule, and then it will go on to execute the SQL action, and then the result of that will go to the result action, which is the last image shown on there. Then the values will be returned back to the client in the case of a loopback service, or if there is a backend, it will forward the retrieved data to the backend. Slide 33, please. Okay, so now we're going to look at use case 2, authentication and authorization. So just bear in mind, you know, this is quite different from the AAA action. I believe most of you will know a little bit about the AAA action or the AAA policy that the data power device also provides. So with that action, you can retrieve the client's credential, you know, that we provide a number of options to use to retrieve the client's credentials, and then you can go through the authentication, authorization, and auditing phases. But, you know, there's a case where you, instead of using a AAA action, you just want to perform some maybe simple configuration or simple authentication and authorization. So just building off use case one where we try to retrieve the data, you know, there's a case where you want to ensure that whoever is trying to retrieve the data has the correct authorization. So you want to go through some phase of authentication and authorization. Once again, the image shown just shows a client that is trying to maybe access some resources or post some data to the backend server, but then also perform some authentication phases before the client request makes it to the backend. Slide 34, please. So in this case, you know, like I said, this is very similar to use case one. You've configured your service. You've been able to test and, you know, make sure that the client can access the backend or can access whatever resource that client is trying to access. But now you want to include some logic to authenticate or authorize the client by accessing the database for either maybe like the client credentials or the authentication data from the database before the client makes it to the back end. So this approach is getting a little bit more custom, because if you have to use the SQL action, you'd be quite limited in a sense that you don't have the flexibility to be able to maybe, you know, program or, you know, implement your business logic in that manner. But yet still, you can still use the SQL action and to select for the input method, use a style sheet to build whatever expressions that you want. But in this case, it will be more appropriate to use the SQL execute extension function, or use the SQL execute extension element. So the style sheet snippet below is just showing the case where a style sheet is being used to client, maybe like the customer's name and password, build the query string, and that is being stored in the query variable. And then by use of the SQL execute extension function with a data source object name, the query is made against the database, and then the results are stored in the results variable, after which you can, you know, perform or apply any other business logic. So, you know, this can help you to just perform just those, you know, little type of authentication and authorization of client request. Slide 35, please. So now we'll move on to look at use case 3 that involves login and auditing transactions. So this is also a case where some processing is happening and you want to capture some logs or some reasons why maybe the client request failed. So over the next few slides, we'll see the configuration that can be used. Slide 36, please. Okay, so for this one, we'll actually look at a case of schema validation failures, but this is not the only use case for this. If you think of it, if, let's say, for whatever reason, the authentication or authorization step fails within processing, you still want to capture that and log that entry, then this approach can still be used. So what we've seen on slide 36 is the request rule, where we still have a match rule, you know, meaning that if, like, you want some specific validation to take place, you know, based on some header or some URI that is coming from the client, you've configured your request rule to catch that and then execute that processing rule. So after the match is done, you have the on-error action, which is right before any other processing actions are added. So what that is doing is that if there are any failures during processing, you want that on-error action to catch it and then either maybe continue processing, or you want to invoke some special processing rule to handle that error that occurs. So the on-error action is the action that has been labeled number 2. Then number 3, in this case, as I mentioned, we are dealing with schema validation failures. So number 3 is the validate action, and what that uses will be a schema or some withdraw that has, like, the schema definition, and what it will do, it will try to validate the client request that came in. It can be a SOAP message, it can be just a normal XML document. And then the fourth label is transform action. That will most likely transform, like, the data and then, you know, before sending it to the backend. So for this configuration, that means that you're most likely dealing with XML or SOAP. So the request type for your service in this case will be XML or SOAP. Slide 37, please. So as I mentioned, image number 2 was the on error action, and what that is doing is it's catching the on error the error that occurred during processing, and then calling another rule to handle that error. So this is the other rule that is going to handle the error, either like the schema validation that occurs, or maybe whatever transform failures that occur. So this image is just showing another match rule in there with the transform action. And in this case, the transform action will be using the style sheet, which in turn will use the DP execute extension function, element or extension function, to make the queries to the database to log, like, the failures, to maybe do some additional processing, you know, before it inserts like the data into the database. So, you know, once again, this approach can be used to handle failures during processing and then update or insert those failures into the, you know, database for the database admin or for the, you know, data power admin to have a closer look at some of the failures that are occurring. slide number 38, please. All right, so this is actually an article that was written, and this page just gives a link to that if you have more interest in knowing how to set this up. You can visit that. The title of the article is Westphalia Data Power in DB2 Pure XML, Part 2, DB2 Pure XML as an audit log for Westphalia Data Power, and the link is provided right there. Slide 39, please. Okay, so the next use case will be batch processing. So this is the case where you have your records to be inserted into the database. You have a batch up. So you have a number of records that you want to insert into the database. So you send that to the data power device, and then it goes through some processing, and then all the entries are inserted into the database, and maybe like the result of that is actually sent to the backend, or maybe some parts of the document or records are inserted, and then the rest are sent to the backend. So once again, you can also have the case where your backend is not really involved, so you just have a loopback service where you just send all your records in a batch, in a batch manner, and then all of them are inserted into the database. Slide 40, please. So now we'll take a closer look at what the format can be in this case. So this will most likely be in an XML structure or format where you have, as we've seen on the screen, we have a root element records, and then we have like the child element or like the children, where each record element will contain some information. You could also go to the extent of maybe structuring this where each record can have its own SQL statement to perform. So let's say for a specific record, you want to do an update rather than insert, or you want to delete. You can describe all of that in this XML document, batch it up, and then, you know, send it to the device. Slide 41, please. So for this type of configuration, you want to use, you most likely want to use the multi-record gateway, and then the request and response type for that will be XML. Since you're dealing with XML, you also want to take note of the parser, XML parser limits and the XML manager that will be used by the service. Since the size of the batch or XML input can be greater than the limit specified, so you just want to make sure you adjust those parser limits accordingly. And also, you know, the reason why the multi-record gateway service will be more appropriate in this case is that it just allows you to provide this batch document over, you know, different front-side handlers. So with the multi-record gateway, you can handle, you know, for like the front side, you can handle HTTP, HTTPS, FTP, SFTP, polling, you can do MQ, you can do TIP code, you can do, you know, quite a number of, you know, different protocols. So in that case, you can configure your FTP front side polar to retrieve files, these batch files from the FTP server, insert them into like the database, and then maybe send the results to the backend, or maybe back to the FTP server. So this the multi-record gateway service seems more appropriate, but then again, all of that will depend on the requirement. A very, you know, simple config can still be with the XML firewall service and a loopback, you know, for the backend. Now, for the processing rule, once the data comes in, it's been structured in a way that it's very easy for you to iterate through. So the more appropriate combination for processing would be for each. So you can use for each in the SQL action in this case. So the for each action can take this input and iterate through all the records. So you can say maybe for each record, you want to, you know, perform or insert this data into the, you know, database. You want to update like the record, or you want to execute some stored procedure, or you want to, you know, handle like that record based on what has been specified in the XML document. So in a more custom approach, using the for each and SQL actions, you can use the transform action with a custom style sheet. So for you to be able to execute these SQL statements, you in the style sheet, you want to use the DP execute extension function or the extension element to do the insertion or to handle that record accordingly. Slide 42, please. Okay, so the last use case that we'll be discussing today will be binary processing. So, you know, binary data, you know, ranges quite a lot, and for this, we'll just focus on images and PDF files. So you have some data that you want to insert into the database, and then maybe like the results of that get sent to the server, or you just want to perform that action without sending any data to the to the backend. So this image just shows some data coming into the data file device, goes through processing, then the records are actually put into the database, and then maybe some values are sent, or the results of that action is updated or sent to the backend server. In this case, you know, because the binary data, just to maintain like the data and not have any type of data change, maybe due to mishandling or trying to do some more complex stuff with the data before the data is sent, we actually recommend that it's changed to either base 16 or base 64, and then that data can be sent to the device for further processing, and that causes it to stay intact as well. Slide 43, please. Okay. So once again, the configuration for this will be, heavily dependent on your requirements as well. So in for the data power service, you can use any one that we've always been talking about, web application firewall, XML firewall. We have the most broker gateway, and we have the web service proxy. But for the data before the data comes to the buffer, you want to base 64 encode it and XML wrap that data so you can easily access that data, or you can base 16 encode that. And once it's base 16 encoded, it will consume more network bandwidth than the base 64 data, but processing on data power, it will require less processing, and that will most likely be faster. So once the data has been XML wrapped and sent to the box, you can just perform some XPath expressions to get access to the data and then be able to insert that data into the database. Slide 44, please. The request type for the service, can be XML if the data is going to be converted to base 16 or base 64 and then XML wrapped. But in the case that you still have like the raw data that you want to send to the box, you can still have you most likely want to set the non-XML request type if you'll be sending in as a request message, or if this will be retrieved from the backend, then you can have the non-XML response type. And then you can use the binary transform action to do the encoding. So with the binary transform, you can either do WTX or you can use a Contivo FFD flat file descriptor to do the encoding or to XML wrap the data. And then also, once the data has been base 64 encoded and inserted, if you have to retrieve the data and you want to convert back to base 64, or you want to, convert between base 16 and base 64, before you forward it to like another endpoint, there's this extension function that can be used, and it's called the Redux convert extension function. So that can allow you to to convert between base 16 and base 64 or 16 and other encoding formats as well. So if you're interested in knowing more about the Radix convert, you can take a closer look at it in the extensions common guide, which can be found online on the DataPower product documentation site. Slide 45, please. Okay, so this is also a tech note that has been published and that talks more about using Radix Convert to convert binary columns retrieved from the database to base 64. So you can read more about that tech note and the use of the Radix Convert extension function. Slide 46, please. All right, so now I'll hand you over to Carol so she can give a summary and conclude this presentation.
Thank you, Moses. This presentation has been part two of a three-part technical exchange about SQL and ODBC on DataPower. During this presentation, we explored a quick review of the part one, the preliminary presentation. Then Paul talked about the evolution of the SQL data source object, and Paul reviewed the SQL data source object overview, configuration, usage, and limitations. Can I have slide 47, Joseph, please? Then Paul continued to explore the usage of the SQL data source object. He talked about the SQL action, the DP SQL execute extension function, and DP SQL execute extension element, and talked about the SQL data types that we currently support. Slide 48, please. Finally, we reviewed several use cases, Moses did, how to exploit the SQL data source object, taking full advantage of its functionality. May I have slide 49? This chart includes links to a number of sites that provide valuable online resources for WebSphere products. Visit the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site to learn more about upcoming WebSphere Support Technical Exchange webcasts like the one you attended today, and to access previously recorded presentations. The next link down, the Developer Works, offers in-depth technical information. You can visit websphereusergroup.org for user group information and more product information. The IBM Education Assistant consists of self-help modules to get new users up the learning curve quickly. The SR tool is for Passport Advantage clients to open, update, and view their PMRs online. And the My Notifications link on all product support pages lets you sign up for weekly email updates for products of interest to you. And now I'm going to hand off to Joseph.
Thank you, Paul, Moses, and Carol for a great presentation. At this point in time, Catherine, we would like to open the lines for questions.
At this time, we have no questions.
Thank you, Catherine. At this time, we will conclude the presentation.